to be winless, is it the same as being hopeless? But there's a few teams in the NFL that are both. We discuss today on a Wednesday on Theoretically Speaking.
Live from the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios.
The man your man could smell.
Theo Dorsey is Theoretically Speaking.
But are you a different animal and the same beast?
Streaming live on YouTube.
You're going to break up with me because of what I do on the radio?
Here's Theo Dorsey.
Good heap. It's your boy Theo Dorsey, man. I am cruising, not bruising on this Wednesday. It feels good to be with you. Always a joy to take you on this ride from 2 to 4 here on ESPN 106.3. This is our final day CCAT-less. I have gotten the bat signal. I have gotten the message. And CCAT will be back on the ones and twos on the other side of the glass starting tomorrow. He's back from his vacation to Italy, the Amalfi Coast. In Sorrento, he was having a ball. He probably had a little bit too much fun. We'll discuss that with him, especially because I saw a video of him approaching a street vendor and losing his morals, and absolutely losing his morals with a street vendor. We'll address that because I'm disappointed in him for that, but I'm grateful to have him back tomorrow as we get ready to kick off week 3 of the NFL. You can't see my guy because he doesn't have his camera popped on right now, but Dave McGrider, MacGyver Deruda, now I can't even say his name right now, as you can't see him, is on the ones and twos for us. He's going to hold down the fort for today as Damian also getting some things shaken. But that's why we're not hopeless here on Theoretically Speaking, because we have the man with the master plan holding us down on the engineering side of things today. But there are a few teams in the NFL today, which now that we've gotten two strong data point weeks, we've gotten 2 weeks full of a lot of I mean, we've had games that have seen teams literally lose their starting quarterback for an amount of time that is TBD. We've had teams that have felt like they've lost everybody but their quarterback in the Los Angeles Rams. And we also have 9 squads in the NFL right now that currently sit at 0-2. And though you may be winless, that does not mean you are hopeless. But that Venn diagram has a meeting point in the center where a lot of fan bases sit today, and I am going to go through each of them one by one here on Theoretically Speaking. We also have Evan Cohen from Unsportsmanlike joining us around 2:30. He's going to pull up in about 30 minutes. We'll debrief with him over the NFL weekend, talk some Tua return timetables, as well as his thoughts on the Dolphins chasing Bryce Young. He said some interesting things this morning on Unsportsmanlike about actually going after Bryce Young, throwing a draft pick in there to see if you can get a guy out of Carolina that franchise seemingly has given up on, and the Dolphins might be a team in the quarterback market down the line. We'll have to see. But getting back to the point here, there's a chance, right? You have to feel like even if you're down on your squad right now, there's a chance you still can come back from an 0-2 deficit, if you want to call it that. Reminiscent of a playoff series in the NBA, an 0-2 deficit, you can still make some things shake. I want to give you a couple of stats and facts before we get into the figures of the teams that are actually in this thing. There's actually been 3 teams that have started the NFL season 0-2 and have gone on to win the Super Bowl in the past. That door is still open. 11% of teams historically in the NFL have started off 0-2 and still made the playoffs. And if you think about it today, now that there are more regular season games than there ever had been before in previous seasons with 17 versus 16, and really back then 14 and even down to 12, now that you have 17 games to make up ground, there is an open door like never before in the NFL, 7 seeds in each conference, for teams to be able to make it to the playoffs and still make a late push, though they have started off 0-2. And if you're like the Cincinnati Bengals and you've done that for the past 3 years, you're used to this territory. But maybe you're the Baltimore Ravens. And maybe you came into this year thinking, hey, we're fresh off of the AFC Championship appearance. We'll kick our season off on Thursday Night Football against the 2-time defending champion Chiefs. And we have a chance to set ourselves into motion, to put ourselves into position to potentially look like one of those teams that could be one of the last teams standing in January or February yet again. But they're off to an 0-2 start, and they're not alone. Here's the list of teams. Here's the list of teams right now as we stand here today on a Wednesday heading into week three of the NFL season that started off 0-2. You have the Ravens. You have the Bengals. You have the Colts, the Jaguars, the Broncos. Ooh, the Broncos. I can't wait to get into to what they got going over there with Sean Payton. The Giants, Titans, my former team, the Panthers. Thank God I was delivered from them. And then, of course, the Los Angeles Rams, who maybe define hopeless right now as an 0-2 team that not only has, I mean, I think four out of their five starting linemen that they started the year with on the offensive side, out right now. Puka Nacua, out. Cooper Kupp, likely to be placed on IR soon. He's out right now. You're just left with Matthew Stafford, Sean McVay, and a heap of dudes who are almost nameless, which we've seen them do stuff with before, but I think it'll be working a miracle if Sean McVay can make something out of that as well again. And I have to start this thing off with, which team do I already look at right now and see them as winless and both hopeless as well? It's probably the team that this offseason just gave their quarterback, who has done everything in the NFL except not really much at all, has not really proven to anybody that he's going to be a legitimate superstar in this league, but he's been more so promise and potential and less results. And they named their home stadium after him. The Jacksonville Jaguars starting off the year 0-2, not being able to knock off a Dolphins team that looks very susceptible to doing so. We saw what the Bills did to them. And then failing to score more than 13 points at home against the Cleveland Browns at Trevor Bank Stadium. That is based on both expectations entering the year, the moves they made this offseason, and where they stand right now. The Jacksonville Jaguars are absolutely winless and hopeless for this season. And if you look at what they have coming up next for the Jaguars, which is a trip to Orchard Park to play at the Buffalo Bills on Monday Night Football, a team that had the Miami Dolphins literally backed into a corner, was just bludgeoning them, beating them into a pulp, into a bloody pulp. And that was before the Dolphins lost their quarterback for, again, Tua just got placed on IR. I'm not even talking about what ended up happening to Tua in that sense. I'm talking about the fact that the Dolphins looked non-competitive at home against this Bills team. The Jaguars starting off the season 0-2 and then having to travel to Buffalo and play a squad like that that looks primed to be a serious contender in the AFC, though they've lost so many different players, it feels like addition by subtraction right now because they have a real identity, and it's in the run game. It's in controlling the football in a defense that I didn't believe in coming into the year because they lost a lot of the names. I'm a dummy. I'm a fool. Sean McDermott, though he might pick the wrong things to use to inspire his team from time to time, he might draw from the wrong toolbox to elicit some inspiration into the Bills. Whatever he's doing, it's working. And whatever they're doing out there in Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence and an offense that we thought would be revamped and an O-line that did not get retooled in the way that we thought they would. They've already been one of the worst offensive lines in the league this year. Down by three at home with a chance to drive late in the fourth quarter. And we saw what Kirk Cousins did in primetime against the Eagles, and we see Trevor Lawrence take a sack in the end zone for a safety when the Jaguars needed it most. I can say this. The easiest way to summarize what the Jaguars season is going forward after you paid Trevor Lawrence that huge deal, $50-plus million a year, $275 million total. You pay him all of that money, you name the stadium after him. The Jaguars are winless. The Jaguars are hopeless. And if you want to put it in the words of their very franchise quarterback themselves.
Yeah, I mean, we suck right now, so I don't.
They suck. And for a team that actually looked at this season as an opportunity to maybe, you know, cool the flames on the Houston Texans, who were the darling of the NFL because of what C.J. Stroud did in his rookie year. A team that maybe looked to exert its dominance back on the league because there was the excuse that was baked in that Trevor Lawrence got injured halfway through the season. Remember, the Jaguars started off last year like 8-1, 8-2. They were on fire. They had it all going before Trevor Lawrence suffered some injuries. And then down the stretch, they lost game after game until they fell out of the playoff race. Well, now you look at it, and Trevor Lawrence has lost each of his last seven starts. The Jaguars are 1-7 in their last eight games, and the one game that they did win was quarterbacked by C.J. Beathard. I don't know if there's light at the end of the tunnel in Jacksonville right now. And when I look across the landscape of the nine teams that are winless right now in the NFL, the teams that are 0-2 to come out of the gates, it's clear to me the Jaguars have the most problems that at least don't feel solvable by a team that had actual real expectations. Of course, I could sit here today and tell you the Panthers suck and there's no way out of that. We all know that, right? Even if Bryce Young was going to have a bounce back year from his rookie campaign, which was one of the worst seasons we've seen from a number one overall pick of all time, they were never going to be a team that had any fight in them. There were real serious expectations on the Jaguars to at least make the playoffs this year. And I see no window into which they can do that, because I think on Monday night, they go on the road to Buffalo, they get their ass whooped one more time, and they're going to be 0-3, and they're going to be a squad that is likely in the AFC, then not in a position to be fighting for even a wild card spot. Now you're fighting just to show competence. Now you're fighting if you're Doug Peterson just to retain your job. And if you're Trevor Lawrence and you just signed that major extension this offseason, I don't know what you're fighting for. But when I look at these winless teams, I ask you, which team looks not just winless, but also hopeless? And in the words of Trevor Lawrence and his Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, I mean, we suck right now.
They just suck. And I think to me, it's clearly them. 888-760-3776. 888-760-3776. That's the number to join in on Theoretically Speaking on this Wednesday. You can also jump in the YouTube chat and drop a comment in there at Theo Speaking. 888-760-3776. That's the number for the radio show here. If you want to tap in and give me your team that you think is both winless and hopeless in the NFL. And I don't think there's any team, especially just based on the expectations. It's easy to go to one of these teams, like the Titans even, and say that they're winless and hopeless. But I don't see hopelessness with Tennessee. The Titans, their quarterback right now, Will Levis, he literally threw two games away. You're a couple of terrible Will Levis mistakes away from actually being 2-0 in Tennessee. Their defense has looked up to par. They've actually allowed the least amount of yards in the NFL right now, and they have been strong on that side of the ball. Bill Callahan has some things to figure out as a rookie head coach, and Will Levis has plenty to continue to figure out as a starting quarterback in Tennessee. But there is still hope in Tennessee. There is zero hope right now in Jacksonville. And as Jalen put in our our chat here on YouTube, they just slapped Trevor's name on the stadium. They put Trevor Lawrence's name on the stadium. They signed a check, 5 years, $275 million. And what do you have to show for it? Brian Thomas looks good. Nothing else really in the Jacksonville Jaguars uniforms look good at all. 888-760-3776, 888-760-3776. That's the number to jump in to Theoretically Speak and hop in on the Baptist Health Hotline, and we'll take your call and take your winless and hopeless team in the NFL. Baptist Health Orthopedic Care. Are you experiencing foot and ankle pain and need to see an expert in the field? Baptist Health Orthopedic Care is a team of foot and ankle orthopedic surgeons and specialists who are regarded as leaders in their specialty. Visit BaptistHealth.net/ortho to learn more today. Baptist Health Orthopedic Care combines its resources of experienced physicians and leading-edge treatments and technology to provide advanced orthopedic, foot and ankle, joint replacement, spine, and sports medicine care. Visit BaptistHealth.net/ortho for more information today. Baptist Health Orthopedic Care has offices conveniently located in Palm Beach County through the Florida Keys. Learn more by visiting BaptistHealth.net/ortho. Which team in the NFL that is currently winless also feels the most hopeless? Feels like they have the least amount of hope. The New York Giants, when they had their offseason hard knocks and everything, I for once, I don't know if I'm foolish or not, I for once started to feel like this is a team that actually would maybe present some problems for squads on the other side. Like, this is a squad. You know, Joe Shane had me kind of drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit. I thought, hey, yeah, let's say Saquon Barkley walk. Maybe that's too expensive. Maybe you're right, Joe Shane. Who could succeed behind that terrible offensive line? You made some additions this year. Maybe Daniel Jones looked competent. And then the Giants started playing football and all of that went by the wayside. I don't know if you can call the Giants necessarily hopeless, because based on expectations, this always felt like a throwaway year, like a year that they were punting anyways. So I wouldn't throw them in that category. The Broncos, as much as Sean Payton tried to make us feel strong about who they would be or what they had, I mean, you picked the sixth best quarterback in the draft. You picked the sixth best quarterback in the draft in Bo Nix, and you picked him number 12 overall, and you did so after you're also paying Russell Wilson $38 million a year to play quarterback somewhere else. So I never thought the Broncos would be any good, and the hope is that after this year and after you finally get Russell Wilson off the books, maybe down the line you're able to find a way to make something out of Bo Nix, find some weapons around him that can look pretty promising. And there are some guys out there. There's guys, at least in the fantasy football world, that believe in some of the weapons. Which team is both winless and hopeless currently in the NFL? 0-2. We're 2 weeks in. We got week 3 coming up tomorrow. Hit us up right here on the Baptist Health Hotline, 888-760-3776. Jump in on the conversation on Theoretically Speaking on this beautiful Wednesday. We have Kevin, who is in Lake Worth. Kevin, you are on Theoretically Speaking. And which team do you look at that's 0-2 right now that also feels like there is no hope, zero hope for them to get any better?
Yeah, I got the Cincinnati Bengals as my hopeless team. You know, they have Joe Burrow signed for, you know, the next 5-6 years, whatever it may be. But he's got an injury on his wrist that people keep saying, like, they've never really seen the quarterback go through and really recover from, right? And they just decide to just not pay anybody. They pay Joe Burrow, and they are saying that, you know, oh, Jamar Chase isn't worth what Jamar Chase wants. T. Higgins is going to be gone next year. And we're seeing it with just Jamar Chase and no T. Higgins. Joe Burrow's not as effective.
Yep.
And I hate to break it to you, if you need two wide receivers, two number one wide receivers to be effective, you're probably not that good of a quarterback. And that's the only thing we've only heard about Joe Burrow is, oh, he got him to the Super Bowl. He's probably the number two quarterback behind Patrick Mahomes. Well, Patrick Mahomes lost his number one quarterback or wide receiver and then just went to two straight Super Bowls and won two straight Super Bowls.
Boom.
You lost your number two wide receiver, and you don't look like Joe Burrow anymore. So if you're not going to pay anybody around Joe Burrow, and we're already seeing how without those weapons, like Joe Mixon, he's gone. And look at the running game. It's non-existent, right? Yeah. So if you're not going to pay anybody around Joe Burrow, and if Joe Burrow is not going to be as effective, where are the Bengals going to go?
That's a good call. I appreciate that call, Kevin. That's perfectly put. I hesitated to talk about the Bengals and appreciate that call, Kevin. I hesitated to bring them up only because of this. Their next two games are going to be home to the Commanders and then at the Panthers. They should be able to win those. If they drop one of those two, I'm really going to hit the panic button for them. But coming into this season, I didn't believe much in them. And you're right, he doesn't look much like Joe Burrow because he spent the whole offseason trying to look like Jesse McCartney. Or who else? Who's the NSYNC band person? Eminem? I can't think of the singers that just cut their hair and go blonde like he did. But he's trying to be a B-boy instead of a franchise quarterback, and he's gotten elevated to this platform in Joe Burrow that I'm not even sure he fully deserves yet. Josh Allen deserves that more than he gets it. Lamar Jackson deserves that more than he gets it. I got Lance Bass here from Jalen in the chat. That's who. Lance Bass. I'm not up to date on the boy band pop stars or whatnot. Maybe I'll ask Evan Cohen from Unsportsmanlike when he joins us in a few minutes here who Joe Burrow is cosplaying right now. But he ain't cosplaying a franchise quarterback or a guy that's going to be contending for Super Bowls anytime soon. The good thing for right now for the Bengals, that offensive line looks a lot better than it had been in previous years. And it starts there with a lot of teams. The reason why I'm a little panicked on the Ravens is as good as Lamar Jackson has been, the O-line has been an even bigger problem than we assumed coming into the year. They flipped 3 of their 5 starters. Their offensive line coach, I can't believe this story or headline got buried a bit, but the Ravens literally lost their offensive line coach in this offseason. Like, he passed away. A guy that has been coaching that O-line for years and years. Like, that's mixed with flipping a lot of that O-line, and it's looked bad through 2 weeks where you have Lamar Jackson getting pressured on every other dropback. He's had to throw the ball 20-plus more times than Patrick Mahomes already because they've been at a deficit more than they should be. And Derrick Henry's outside of the top 10 in carries right now. A lot of that is to do to the fact that the offensive line has been ineffective in Baltimore. But the Bengals' offensive passing game, outside of a couple of great plays against the Chiefs, has been a bit MIA. And Joe Burrow, without two elite wide receivers on the outside, we haven't seen that much in the NFL. We saw it in college. It wasn't that great. The few times we've seen it in the National Football League, he hasn't been good. And there's a lot of excuses made for Joe Burrow. You can't build your whole career just based off of you beating Patrick Mahomes once in an AFC title game. You beating him in a regular season game because your defensive coordinator, Lou, is giving Pat so many problems. That's really the thing that is giving the Bengals the edge in these games, not the fact that Joe Burrow has a lot of confidence. He's got to show a lot more. That's why in the offseason when everybody said, who's the most overrated quarterback in the NFL? Everybody wanted to raise their hand and say Josh Allen. All of the NFL players said Josh Allen. I got on here, and I was brave enough to say it before the season kicked off. It's really that dude out there in Cincinnati and Joe Burrow. He's the most overrated quarterback in the NFL. And that's not to say that he's bad. That's just to say that what y'all think he is versus what he actually puts out there on the field year after year, if he's even healthy enough to be on the field, it don't add up. It doesn't match. And for the 0-2 teams in the NFL, if the Bengals do drop one of these games against the Commanders or the Panthers, not only are they out of the playoff race, they need to figure out how they're going to transform what they're doing there because they might have paid the wrong guy. Ja'Marr Chase still chasing his bag. It seems like they put those contract negotiations off to the side for this year. Joe Burrow being locked in for the next 5 years, we'll see how that works out if you're not able to retain number one because he's the number one priority on that offense. Joe Burrow, as stable as he makes that offense, as good of a quarterback as he is, as calming of a presence, Joe Cool, as much confidence as he gives fans and whatnot, you tell me what that turns out to. We don't even give Matt Stafford the credit for winning the Super Bowl as much credit as we give Joe Burrow for losing it to him. I'm still not going to get that. But Matt Stafford, at the end of the day, is a champion, and though his Rams are 0-2, he has that Super Bowl trophy, that Lombardi, back in L.A. to show for it, to show for the good works he's done since he's come to the Rams. There's another team, though, here in South Florida who I'm going to be giving out our Sunshine Standings, which are the top college football teams in the state of Florida. I think this team might have to leapfrog in there based on what other teams in Florida are doing. And I'm talking about the Kaiser Seahawks. I know we're trying to stick to Division I, but in the NAIA, the Kaiser Seahawks have been some dogs. And also this year, they actually beat their first Division II team in the history of the program. I want y'all to tap in right now because if you want to get locked in with champions, you're going to want to check out the Kaiser football team this season as the Seahawks have their home opener this Saturday against Fort Lauderdale. This Saturday in West Palm Beach, the defending national champs hosting Fort Lauderdale. Kickoff is at 6 p.m. We're going to have tickets available starting at just $8. $8. $8, and you get to watch the defending national champs coached by Miles Russ. Go to KUSeahawks.com. The ESPN West Palm Street team also going to be out there at Kaiser the beginning at 3:30. We'll make sure that you're the flagship home of the NAIA champions also here, ESPN 106.3. We're going to have your coverage starting right here on the radio airwaves at 5:30. It's Kaiser's home opener, your first of four opportunities to see the Seahawks in person at the flagship campus of Kaiser University in West Palm Beach. And again, it's this Saturday versus Fort Lauderdale. Get your tickets at KUSeahawks.com. That's KUSeahawks.com. Last night, I was at... Slow down. That was a little cats and dogs right there. C-Cat is I heard he just touched back in the States. That was my fault, Dave, by the way. My laptop bumped it. And there he is trying to interject himself into Theoretically Speaking. Too soon! Calm down. We'll get cats and dogs on Friday. When C-Cat comes back tomorrow, we'll have to address that. Last night, I was at Palm Beach Autographs at the Wellington Mall. The mall in Wellington Green, I was able to see Odell Beckham Jr., Tyreek Hill, Devon Achane, Jonnu Smith, meet and greet with a bunch of Dolphins fans. They packed that thing out. The line was running all the way back. Like, it took hours and hours to get through all of the fans as they were able to interject and interact with folks. And one thing I kept thinking was, man, this is one of the most awkward times to have this kind of a meet and greet. Coming off of the news that Tua Tagovailoa is on the IR with all of the discussion around Tua now being, once again in a position where he has to contemplate retirement, not just when do you come back, but if you're going to come back to football in general. I want to say this. I am 100% just not only grateful, but also a little bit at awe for all of the fans, especially those that weren't just Dolphins fans, but just fans of OBJ and the stars that came, that they didn't bring any of that up. They were not, there was no ugly comments made. It was a lot of joy. It was a lot of fun. And also, I did get straight from the horse's mouth from Odell Beckham Jr. himself. He told me, 2 weeks. 2 weeks, Dolphins fans. I'm not sure if the Tua injury and the uncertainty around quarterback in Miami affects this at all, but 2 weeks away from OBJ being back ready to play, again, that doesn't mean he's going to play in 2 weeks. That just means he'll be healthy enough to do so, and I am excited to see what that looks like finally for Miami that went out and got Odell Beckham Jr., and we haven't seen anything from him since. So again, 2 weeks, OBJ, he's geared up, he's ready, he's in good vibes. Also, Tyreek Hill, he had a moment with a Ravens fan where a Ravens fan was trying to get him to come on over to Baltimore. And he did say maybe he's the missing piece to a Super Bowl for the Ravens. Don't see that ever happening. He just re-upped that contract. Just some interesting things that came out of that. So good vibes around the Dolphins, even in the midst of uncertainty. And always good vibes here at ESPN 106.3 when we're able to bring in our guy, Evan Cohen. We'll talk some NFL with him next. We'll also pick his brain on who he thinks is both winless and hopeless in the NFL 2 weeks in. Dave is on the ones and twos for In for C-Cat. I'm Theo Dorsey. We're theoretically speaking on ESPN 106.3. It's that time of the year where both hope springs, right? Joy springs. There's a lot of optimism around squads, but also there is teams with a lot of dissent. There's a lot of teams that start to fall apart at the seams, and it's because they can't seem to get any one thing right. You see it every single time, every single year, you can point out a squad that have lost all hope. To me right now, it's got to be the Jaguars, whose next test against the Buffalo Bills is not going to give them any more of a slither or gleam of hope. But we'll see. That's why they play the games. While we kick it here in the Evan Cohen Studios, how about we bring in the man that the studio is named after here in West Palm Beach, Evan Cohen from Unsportsmanlike. He joins us here on Theoretically Speaking in his typical spot on a Wednesday, and he does so as he's getting out of his car, man. Did you get where you're trying to get to safely there?
I'm good. Sorry. I don't know what just happened, Theo. My bad. Sorry about that.
No, you're good. You're absolutely good, man. You know, when you're bringing in a star from Unsportsmanlike, again, with Michelle Smallman and Chris Canty, and a guy who's the studio is named after, a beep from a car every now and then isn't going to be an issue from me. What might be an issue for the Jaguars in particular is the fact that you just gave Trevor Lawrence a mega franchise quarterback contract. You just renamed your stadium after him, Trevor Bank Stadium, because he's your guy. You're building around him. And two games in, the Jaguars are already feeling like a team that feel hopeless, especially based on their expectations. And in the very words of Trevor Lawrence himself.
Yeah, I mean, we suck right now, so I don't.
It's bad. It's bad, Evan. When I look at the winless teams right now in the NFL as we head into week three, they feel like the team that is most hopeless as well as being winless. When you look at those nine squads, is there anybody that you see that feels more hopeless than them? Again, also based on expectations. Of course, we could say the Giants or the Panthers are, but nobody thought they'd be fighting for a playoff spot.
Right. I think that's an interesting way of looking at it, Theo, and I think the way you classified it is the right way of looking at it, right? Because can you really say, if you're going to go based on expectations, like the Panthers aren't hopeless now. Like, it's not like, oh, my God, I can't believe they stink. Like, we all thought they were going to stink,
yeah.
Right? But I will give you – I guess I'll throw out a couple of options for you on this based on what you're saying. This is going to sound weird, and I'm nervous about this team. I was high on them going into the season. With all of the injuries, how much hope do the Rams have right now?
Absolutely none. Absolutely none, if you ask me. And you're right. That's the one that it almost feels cheap to use, and it's because they're decimated on the offensive line. They've lost their two best weapons, two guys that are Pro Bowl-level weapons in Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua, and now you have Sean McVay trying to play makeshift on the offensive side, which could work out. Oh, but then also on the other side, no Aaron Donald and injuries on that side as well. I don't see how they can compete for a division title anymore, and that was a team that I had winning the NFC West coming in.
I'll give you another one. I understand that a lot of people listening, theoretically speaking right now, are not going to like this.
Uh-oh.
Unless Bryce Young is a Dolphin, how do you look at the Miami Dolphins and suggest they have hope?
That's what, and again, the way we were doing it was, we were doing it with teams that were also winless, so the Dolphins didn't qualify, but you're right, especially based on expectations coming in. Mike McDaniel spent all of training camp, all of the offseason talking about how they were going to break that streak of being the longest active professional team in American sports without a playoff win, 24 years. They haven't won a playoff game since 2000, back when you were just getting started out here in West Palm, right? Like, or was that before?
Before then. I was 2003.
Wow.
2003 we started.
That predates.
Yeah, so I broke the rules a little bit in terms of the win list, so I apologize on that.
Yeah.
But as you're presenting this case and argument, I revert back to the Dolphins because I had this moment today where I was thinking about it. Like, I believe Brian Flores is actually a really good coach, should be a head coach in the NFL, all right? I believe that Mike McDaniel is a really good head coach and obviously is a head coach in the NFL. They're going to have two coaches back-to-back that I personally deem to be really good. And at this moment, Theo, I am not confident that either one of them will ever have a playoff victory with the Miami Dolphins.
Wow. Wow.
Now, to go to the 0-2, this could just be a gap year for the Rams. This could be a gap year for the Ravens. I don't think you can call it a gap year for the Jaguars, as you're bringing up, because they've underachieved up until this point. But, to go 30 for 30 style, what if I told you that as a result of this, in your words, hopeless year for Jacksonville, Bill Belichick was their coach next year?
Oh, man. You know, I would actually... I think that there has to be a change at head coach in Jacksonville, and not just because there's a lot of people that are out on Doug Peterson right now. It's just you can't change Trevor Lawrence. You just gave him the big contract, and you need some kind of new vibe around there in Jacksonville. Has anybody – I mean, Trevor Lawrence hasn't done much in the league right now, and when I look at what Urban Meyer and Brandon Staley, two head coaches that aren't head coaches in the league anymore – I think those two guys did more for Trevor Lawrence than anybody else in the history of the NFL. Brandon Staley, because he was coaching that Chargers team that gave away the 28-point lead to Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars in the postseason, so now he can say he has a playoff win. And Urban Meyer, because he was so bad as a head coach that we almost gave Trevor Lawrence two years where it was almost like an amnesty where it didn't matter his rookie season or his sophomore season. Because we blame it all on Urban Meyer. At some point, Trevor Lawrence has to take some accountability for his inability to win football games or be productive, and maybe Bill Belichick is the guy that can teach that to him, or maybe you're just a Bill Belichick disciple that wants him to coach anywhere that has a potential opening.
Well, not maybe on the last one. Yeah, this is another interesting thing. Can you be a disciple of someone that you've never, like, really ever worked with? Huh. I talked to him for 1 second once. Like, how can I be a obsessed with Belichick and Riley. Like, Riley I've talked to a bunch on ESPN West Palm, but, like, no, he wouldn't know me if I fell on him. But I follow everything that Belichick – I guess you can, right? Because, oh, boy, I'm walking down a weird path.
I was about to say, yeah.
This is what politics are. That's what – right? Because, like, there's so many of these people that are very political. I'm not one of them. That, like, follow all of these politicians, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, and will do anything for them, never having known them or knowing if they would do anything for you. Boy, that was a very introspective comment. Why did I just ask myself that? Fascinating.
And look, I think you walked yourself into the very fact that, yes, you are a Belichick disciple, though you did not work in line with him. Here, I just looked up the Webster Dictionary definition. A follower or student of a teacher, leader, or philosopher. And for you,
right,
I think
so he wouldn't be my teacher. He wouldn't be my leader. He would be my philosopher.
Yes. Yes. And that qualifies in the definition. And for people that think that this is just like an Evan Cohen, like if he's just doing this on the air and on the radio waves just for show. No. Evan, in normal speak, if you're just talking to him on a daily basis, if you just walk up to him and have a conversation, he might throw a Bill Belichick line at you. And he's very genuine about it. Like, you legitimately follow the teachings of Bill Belichick. So, yes, you qualify as a disciple.
What a great day for me. I'm a Belichick disciple. Who knew? Wow. May have to change my Twitter bio at Evco Radio. I'm a Belichick disciple.
Yes.
I never knew I was a disciple. Now I'm a disciple guy. Who knew?
Well, you know, and again, this is the things you learn about yourself here on Theoretically Speaking, you never know. But I did, you did, you started that question off with something interesting because you were talking about the potential of Tua not being the Dolphins quarterback long term. And I heard you this morning on Unsportsmanlike, which you can hear here on ESPN 106.3, speaking specifically to the Dolphins going out and chasing damaged goods in Bryce Young. As soon as this happened, as soon as the Panthers benched Bryce Young, that was the first thought I had. Like, if a third-round pick can get you that guy, you have to offer it up and go and get it. Heck, Stephen Ross tossed away a first-round pick just to flirt with Tom Brady, so I know they would think value would be in it. But the real question is, if you're the Dolphins and you bring in Bryce Young right now, what message would that be sending to Tua before he's even made up his mind on if he's going to, you know, come back to football fully? Like, do they have to wait until Tua comes back to them with a full decision before they go out and get a guy like that? Could potentially be the next guy up?
Here's the problem with that argument, Theo. Tua's not coming back to them with a full decision ever. He's not retiring.
Yeah.
He's not going to voluntarily retire for a myriad of reasons. But let's narrow him down to two. Number one, he clearly still wants to play. Number two, if it's his decision to retire, he loses a lot of money. And if he has to retire because of medical circumstances, you are going to want to get every dollar that is given to you because you are going to want to be compensated for that sport ending your professional career and the way in which that sport is operated, that ending your career. So he is not going to retire. What the Dolphins have to do is be honest and real with him and simply say to him the truth, which is, Tua, we love you. We care about you. We want you to be our quarterback. That's why we gave you an insane amount of money. We are going to go through this process with you. There may come a point, a la the Miami Heat with Chris Bosh, where we have to do everything in our power to protect you from yourself, but we are not there yet. You, the person, are number one priority. In the meantime, we have a business to run. You understand that more than anyone. And who better to honor your time here than a guy that basically you handed, by way of Mac Jones, the Alabama program to, who plays similarly to you, who is built a little bit more frail, similarly to you, and who can be a class act the way that you can in operating this franchise. Because let me explain something. When you have a sudden, out of nowhere, retirement, or God forbid, tragic in real life or sports tragedy like this, which could become a real life thing, happen with no time to prepare for it. The last thing on earth you have is the ability to quickly and swiftly have any kind of resolve to bounce back from this. The Miami Dolphins have been given an absolute gift. They have a chance to go out there right now and get a player to replace Tua for now and or for later, or never, but just get him, who is the number one pick in the draft, not a decade ago, last year. You cannot lose out on this. I don't care, Theo, if Bryce Young comes to the Dolphins one day and stinks, does not matter. You have to roll the dice, and you have to do it now.
It's worth the risk if you're the Dolphins, and also for the Panthers, it could be worth it for you because even, you know, we've seen enough of Bryce Young in Carolina, especially under the way that organization is ran, that we know that's not going to work out. They're going to probably flip coaches again within the next year or so. And this is already Bryce Young's third coach. He's been in the league for a year and two games. It's absolutely ridiculous what he's had to go through in Carolina. If he does go to Miami and he is given a shot to at least back up Tua for the next couple of years or learn from Mike McDaniel, I would be interested to see what comes of that. But on the topic of quarterbacks, I was asked in our chat here on YouTube, I was trying to figure out who Joe Burrow is cosplaying with his new hairdo because the Bengals were brought up as one of those teams that might be hopeless because here they are again starting off the season winless through two games. I was told to ask you if you know who Lance Bass is.
Of course I know Lance Bass is. What an insulting, horrible question you're asking me. You're going to literally ask me if I know one of the five members of NSYNC. I could give you everything about NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, O-Town, 98 degrees. You know what? I have known you to be a class act, Theo. What an insulting question. You're better off spitting on me than asking me if I know who Lance Bass is. How dare you?
Well, I don't. So the problem is I didn't know Lance Bass by name, but now that you say NSYNC, it resonates with me. Is that who Joe Burrow looks like right now? I thought Slim Shady. I'm hearing Lance Bass. Is that a good comp?
Yeah, and Lance Bass is not a good comp. Slim Shady, way better comp, no doubt.
Okay, so more spot on with it anyways. Okay, I appreciate that. You cleared it up for me, and I'm sorry for spitting on you by asking if you knew who Lance Bass was. But if I'm unfamiliar with the name, how am I?
You're lucky. You know what? You're lucky right now I don't say bye-bye-bye, but it's going to be me that's going to stay here with you right now. So
Oh, two Backstreet Boy drops. All right, that was good. I like
NSYNC.
That.
NSYNC. You got that wrong. It's NSYNC.
Golly. This is bad. This is going terribly. It started off so great. It's going terribly. Can I at least ask you one more thing before you go off in your journey there? Who do you feel like? I heard Deebo Samuel say, and I've been saying coming into this season that the 49ers, this is going to be a Super Bowl hangover year for them. They looked like a behemoth in week one against the Jets. All of that turned and flipped on its head against the Vikings the very next week. We saw Deebo Samuel say on a podcast, it's now or never for the 49ers to win the Super Bowl. I feel like the real team that's now or never is the Jets, but the more I listen to Deebo say that, I look at the fact that they're going to have to pay Brock Purdy after this year, and it is getting a little late in San Francisco with that iteration of that roster. Who do you feel like is more now or never right now, the Jets with the older quarterback or the 49ers with the younger guy, but they're going to have to pay him and make some sacrifices around that roster when they do?
The Niners are more now or never for a semantics reason. To me, the Jets are never or never. Because if you tell me that the Niners win it all this year, I'm not going to be surprised. That's the now part. If you tell me the Jets win it all this year, I'll be very surprised. Because I cannot see Robert Saleh and Aaron Rodgers, that combination, winning a Super Bowl. So the now part would indicate a belief, while it may be slight for you,
yes,
it's greater for me, I'm higher on them than you are, there is some belief that now could happen for the Niners. There is no belief by me that now could happen for the Jets. Jets, never or never. In this case, the Niners definitely now or never.
Well, Jets fans are hearing that right now, and they're saying, Evan Cohen, you're tearing up my heart. Yep.
Well done.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about. I Googled it.
Yeah.
Evan, appreciate your time, man. We'll catch you on Unsportsmanlike tomorrow morning, and we'll see you next week here on Theoretically Speaking. That there was Evan Cohen from Unsportsmanlike. I think he's actually disappointed in me for not knowing the NSYNC folks. That was a time that I grew up in. I should be a little bit more well-versed in NSYNC songs. But again, you know, when it came to NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, they was putting out hits left and right back to back. How was I supposed to keep up with which was which? You got, like, Better Place, Thinking of You. Bye, Bye, Bye. Come on, man. Which one was Justin Timberlake locked in on? I think that was Justin Timberlake was an NSYNC guy as well. So I'm familiar enough. That again was Evan Cohen on Sportsmanlike, 6 to 10 a.m. here with Michelle Smallman and Chris Canty, the resident Super Bowl champion. He says, yeah, the Dolphins have pulled a trigger on Bryce Young. I think they should as well, but I do think they should wait it out a little bit. Let that price go down some, but also get more information on Tua Tagovailoa. You don't want to upset him at all, especially in this time coming fresh off of yet another what felt like tragic moment for the Dolphins on primetime television. We got the Safe Bound Get Around coming up with a huge announcement. Huge announcement out of Portland, Oregon, in a professional sports league here in America. I actually might actually bring a guest on to help me discuss it. We also are going to have Tina come on for the happy hour here on a Wednesday on Theoretically Speaking. So it's good vibes, good times, as always, per usual. And we'll go ahead and get to the break. When we come back, the Safe Bound Get Around, and maybe a special guest, a familiar voice out of Portland to talk about some big news. I'm Theo Dorsey. We're Theoretically Speaking on ESPN 106.3.
Live from the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, Theo Dorsey is Theoretically Speaking. Streaming live on YouTube, here's Theo Dorsey.
It's a Wednesday, baby. Hump day here on Theoretically Speaking. And no better time than now, especially coming on the heels of our guy C-Cat, who's going to be back tomorrow from his vacation, from his voyage over the waters across the sea to go check out Italy. No better time than now than to hop on our vehicle that takes us across all the major sports headlines across the nation, and that is your Safe Bound Get Around.
I get around. What you mean you don't know? Round and round, round and round. I get around.
The Safe Bound Get Around brought to you by Safe Bound Moving and Storage. You're safe with Safe Bound, and let me tell you, you absolutely are. If you're looking to do any kind of a move, whether that's within the state of Florida, out of the state of Florida, maybe you're coming to the Sunshine State, you're going to want to lock in with Safe Bound Moving and Storage. They're located in West Palm Beach. They serve all of Florida. And of course, they're going to offer those long distance moves across America as well. This is a team that doesn't just help you out in your time of need, but also they partner with the Cobham Bank Diaper Bank. They provide moving services for nonprofits. I mean, they have a commitment to the community right here in Palm Beach County as well. They are the beginning of your stress-free move. It is so difficult to move on your own. It's so difficult to get your all your luggage up and your bed and your sofas, and now you're over here dinging up walls and putting stress on your body. Let the professionals do it. Lock in with Safe Bound Moving and Storage. They're family-owned, and they're Florida's most trusted moving company. Kyle Russo's in for the Safe Bound Get Around. Kylan, where are we up first?
We're starting out in Bristol, Connecticut.
Hey, you're Bristol, from Connecticut.
Yeah, this is my neck of the woods. NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski delivered his final Woj bomb ever. This morning, he announced his retirement from ESPN as he's taking his talents to his alma mater to be the general manager for the Bonnies basketball program in St. Bonaventure.
Yeah! Way to go, Woj. I'm actually excited for Woj because the dude works harder than like anybody in the game right now, especially as an NBA insider. Also, his last Woj bomb before the one that he actually announced his retirement, Isaac Okoro. Isaac Okoro, 3 years, $38 million, extension with the Cleveland Cavaliers. That was the last bit of breaking NBA news we got from Woj, a guy that delivered us so many great moments, so many pivotal notifications to my phone. And the last one in the history of the Woj timeline is going to be Isaac Okoro. So good luck to the Bonnies. Also, that's going to be on his wiki page for Okoro. That's going to likely be, on it for the rest of his time in the league in the NBA. I don't know how he'll pan out. That's going to be his call to fame. He was the last Woj bomb.
Next stop.
We shift over to Boulder, Colorado. Hey. Coach Prime Deion Sanders has a message for reporters saying anything negative about his team.
Oh, yeah, Prime. Prime, how do you feel about when they attack your players, Prime?
When I say I genuinely love these kids, I genuinely really do. It's not about what they can do for me on the football field. It's about what I can help them with in life. Landscape has changed in football. Once upon a time, you guys never attacked college players. Now they're making more money than y'all. And some of y'all are envious and jealous about that. So you're on the attack. It was hands-off a college player because he's an amateur. Remember that, guys? Now it's hands-on. Go at them any kind of way you want. They're making more money than me, and I'm mad about it. When you attack them, these guys are sensitive. They've never been attacked. They hadn't gone through what a grown man, what I've been going through with y'all for years.
Coach Prime's sentiment here is right. The problem is sometimes the messenger can be the issue because it's pretty hypocritical coming from a dude that has attacked not only former players that played for him on social media of all places, which as a head coach of a football team, when you're trying to direct your guys, your team, your staff to not make a fool of themselves on the internet, you go out and do that. It's not only vicious, it's irresponsible. But then Coach Prime, when it's advantageous to his son's draft stock, he attacks his own very offensive line, saying that they're the problem. Like, I hope the best for Colorado. I hope the best for all of those players in the locker room, even Coach Prime himself, but he continuously contradicts himself. His attack on the media is disingenuous because he knows that a lot of the times he's the one sparking a lot of these conflicts. And I hope he finds some peace, man. I hope he finds peace, and I hope Colorado can string up enough wins to get to a bowl game because neither one of them look like they're any closer to happening. Goodness gracious. Every other day. If it's not this, it's that with Colorado and Coach Prime.
Next stop.
take a flight over to the east side and go to Atlanta, Georgia, where Arthur Blank, the owner of the Atlanta Falcons, is using Sunday's home game against the Chiefs to induct a special member of the Falcons family into the Ring of Honor, who has meant the world to its organization for decades. Himself.
Oh! I wonder what the selection process was for Arthur Blank. To be like, hey, yeah, I think that this week, you know, we got the defending champs coming in, two-time defending champs, a big year here. We got Kirk Cousins in here. We look promising. Maybe we induct me. Maybe we just put me in the Ring of Honor. And I looked it up to see if any other owners have done it so far. Jerry Jones, surprisingly, has not put himself in the Ring of Honor for the Dallas Cowboys. He put Jimmy Johnson in before he put himself in. I don't know, man. Arthur Blank, that's a heck of a power move there. But I will say him making it a night where they're also giving out a bunch of free hot dogs and sodas and whatnot to the fans. It'll be easy to pack Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Not just because you got Mahomes coming to town, but also being free food. Sign me up. I almost went. Got a wedding to go to, though. It'll be fun.
Next stop.
Shift south to Abacoa, Florida. Yeah. The World Series action tonight in the 5-6-1. The Palm Beach Cardinals are hosting the Lakeland Flying Tigers tonight in the Florida State League World Series tonight at Roger Dean's Chevrolet Stadium. They have a special guest throwing out the first pitch. Who is that?
Colin, it's your boy. It's your boy throwing out the first pitch, dog.
Why?
That was a good one. That was a good one. Russo and Rizzo right after this show. The jab I just took there is more precise, maybe, than the pitch I'm going to throw tonight at Roger Dean Chevrolet Stadium. So come out and check it out. It's my second time doing it. Last time was spring training right over the plate. Money, as always. I'm a lefty, so it's always going to look good. But if you want to pull up and watch me throw the first pitch as well as watch the finale to the World Series in the Florida State League, tickets are actually $10 if you buy them online, $12 at the gate, and the first pitch is at 6:30. Palm Beach Cardinals, they got a chance to be the second straight team at Roger Dean Chevrolet Stadium to win the World Series. They're going to try and do it tonight. I'll be there on hand. It's going to be a great time. Pull up on us. And Jalen in the chat is talking about, have I seen the tape? Have you seen the tape from me throwing out the first pitch? He hasn't. I'll show it to him in the break. And it was excellent. So stop hating.
Next stop.
We finally shift to Portland, Oregon. WNBA is expanding. The league announced today that it's adding its 15th franchise to the Rose City, which had a team named the Portland Fire that folded in 2002.
Huge news. This is huge news out of Portland. And the only way to really address this news is to bring in a familiar voice and a familiar face to this area in Palm Beach County and the Treasure Coast. His name, Tyree Smith. He's formerly of Oxbridge Academy, is a great football player. Then an ESPN West Palm teammate of ours on the TV screens as well as on the radio airwaves. And his first time on Theoretically Speaking, Tyree Smith breaking the news out of Portland. Man, this is huge for y'all. Tyree, what's up with you?
Man, first of all, I love your show, man. You deserve this. This is awesome. Second of all, this WNBA expansion news, big time for Portland, man, and WNBA all in general. It was interesting. Somebody was talking to me about it the other day saying, wouldn't it be great if we were able to get a team back here? And I looked at him and I said, you might be hearing something sooner than later. And bam, now we wake up to some great news. It's a great day here in the Rose City, man.
This is more anticipated maybe than even the Tyree return to West Palm. Every single game I go out to all the time when I'm in the community, people are telling me, hey, Tyree Smith, who now, of course, you know, you're the sports anchor at KATU in Portland. You're having a great time. They want you back here. They miss your voice. They miss your face. But I do wonder for you, knowing how big the WNBA has gotten over the past couple of years, knowing that franchise is coming out there to Portland, we're never going to be able to steal you back now, dog. You're going to be out there in the Northwest forever.
You know what? If y'all happen to get a WNBA team in the next coming years, you might keep my interest a little bit. For right now, you got to hop on this bandwagon because it's hot over here. I mean, you could bring, theoretically speaking, for a location appearance over in Portland if you want.
A remote. Now, I have to ask you, are there any hints from the fan base on what they're going to do? I know they haven't talked about a name or a logo or anything yet. Is there any hints towards them either going back to the throwback of what they had in the early 2000s, or are they going to try to bring something totally new out there?
So it's kind of on the mince, but there is a press conference at 2:30, 5:30 y'all time today that will be discussing a little more details about it. But hearing from my sources so far, it's kind of something brand new. As in, you know, they already have the Golden State Valkyries, a new WNBA team, but then Toronto's getting their own thing. So they kind of want to go the route of something brand new to the franchise that will peak to maybe more of today's generation and to more of what today's relevancy will be. So some news probably on a new front, but Portland Fire is not a bad name if they want to go back to that.
Come on, come on. Bring it back. Bring it back. Tyree, appreciate you pulling up, dog. You can catch Tyree on his social medias at Tyree Smith TV, and you can stop asking me where the hell he's at. Just follow him, and he'll show you. He'll show you. KATU TV out in Portland. Appreciate you, bro.
Appreciate you, brother. Congrats on the show again.
Thank you. That's my guy, Tyree Smith, pulling up. He obviously was a friend before we both got here, but he started a month after me at ESPN West Palm about 4 years ago. Now he's out there kicking it in Portland, doing big things, helping introduce a WNBA team to that area. They're coming in 2026, the 15th franchise in the WNBA. All right, we're going to go to break. It's the beginning of the happy hour. We got to bring in Tina, and we're going to actually readdress what we've been talking about. The most hopeless and winless team in the NFL. I've got the Jags. We'll see if Tina has a team in mind. We're theoretically speaking on ESPN 106.3.